Well, hello, and welcome back to the Nerd Podcast. We finally got the technology working for
us.
Yeah,
yeah, the machines are rising up against us.
Well, the machine knows that we're looking at old machines, and
it is getting jealous.
It won't be replaced by word processors and typewriters and manual and pens.
And pens.
So,
oh,
which is actually perfect to open up. Talking about technology, I didn't even think about that.
We didn't even do that on purpose.
No, I did not.
We're geniuses.
We're getting so good at this.
Yeah.
But we are, before we get into that, I'm Jordan.
I'm Doug.
Good to have you with us.
Yes. What does Nerd Podcast stand for?
Nerd Never Ending Retro Dialogue.
Boom.
You have to do the hand movements, too.
You have to, yeah. I like
that. Karate chops. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. We caught ourselves going down a rabbit hole, didn't
we? We did.
Yes, we did. We were looking at typewriters.
Well, you know what? It's easy to go down a rabbit hole with the internet.
Yes, it is.
With the internet, but you can't do it with typewriters. So.
You cannot. No,
there's... We'd be more productive if we had type. We'd have to type up research and stuff. So,
what we do is we get a typewriter. And then we find a set of encyclopedias.
Oh.
And we type in the question in the typewriter. Then we look it up in the encyclopedia. And then we type out the potential answers on the typewriter. Yeah, that's productive.
For anyone who does not know, I am a huge typewriter nerd. And just kind of an old technology aesthetic guy. And I know you feel the same way.
Yep.
I have 3 electric typewriters right now. One of them is kind of on the fritz. The other one has a couple keys that aren't working, and then the other one is perfectly working, I think. So I have been kind of looking for more to add to my collection. I don't know. It's a weird thing to collect and kind of expensive. Although I will say that the latest typewriter I bought for $7 at a thrift store. I wonder how much they sold it for, if they're selling it, how much it got sold for to the thrift store.
Yeah.
If it was only, or was it just a donation?
Was it just a donation? And since they hadn't tested it, they're just like, oh, just put it out there. Because you rarely find electric typewriters that cheap.
Yeah, well, you rarely find any typewriters that cheap, but I think the thing with electric typewriters are, they're not as romanticized.
Correct.
So I think people are like, oh, this looks like Darth Vader's personal typewriter. Let's just put $7 on there or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but you know, coming full circle, talking about technology and everything, today we are talking about the world of science fiction.
Science fiction.
Which is probably my favorite genre, if I'm going to be honest.
Ooh. Okay.
Because I like it more than fantasy and, like, I don't know.
Yes. Well, science fiction kind of encapsulates all of it, right? You there's a fantasy element to it.
Yeah.
And then as we go down, you'll find that some of the sci-fi can have horror elements to it. It has Western. You can build in the Western elements to it. It's kind of everything. I think with science fiction, like with Westerns in the old days, it's just kind of that love of the unknown and what's out there.
What could be.
And it's just kind of endless. And you can make it whatever you want. You can build a whole world, right? Or universe or galaxy. And just kind of the possibilities are endless. Now, we should mention that we are well aware that we did a sci-fi TV episode.
Right.
Way back when in the beginning. So we probably won't talk much about the sci-fi TV show. So we're going to focus on movies and books. And if we get to it, video games. But let me pose this question first.
Okay.
Back to the Future. Science fiction or not science
fiction?
This
isn't your hot take?
This isn't my hot take. I'll leave the hot take for a little bit later.
Okay.
But I have had conversations with people before, because my stipulation is it is science fiction.
Yeah, I would.
You have a time machine.
Yeah, I would agree.
You're going back in time.
If The Time Machine by H.G. Wells is science fiction, by that principle of having a time machine, then I think Back to the Future must also be science.
Correct. But I have had several people tell me it is not science fiction. It is, you know, it is, I don't even remember. I think one person classified it as action, one it was just...
Action?
Yeah. I'm like, this is not an action movie.
No.
And then other people are like, no, it's not science fiction, because their thing is, you know, they don't go in space. I'm like, oh, you don't need to go in space to be science fiction.
No. I would say, I think it gets overshadowed by the fact that it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a science fiction movie because they go through time, and especially the second one where they go to the future.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I would classify that as a comedy sci-fi movie.
Okay, very good. We're on the same page then.
Yeah.
Would you like me to go ahead and give you my hot take?
I want to hear the hot take.
I'm sure you will talk about the movie.
Okay.
But Space Odyssey, 2001 A Space Odyssey, I am not a fan of.
Oh.
I think it is a horribly overrated movie. I find it boring. I've watched it a couple times. My dad loved it.
Yeah.
And he read the novelization, or he read the book.
Yes, so did I.
But he liked the movie. I just...
That's interesting.
If I never see it again, I'll be okay.
See, I think that's a classic sci-fi movie. I mean...
And I know it is considered that. And I apologize to all those who love it.
I will start by saying I can totally see where you're coming from. The first part of that movie is very... I don't want to say difficult to get through, but it's a little bit of a slog when it's just the apes.
Yeah.
And then it kind of jumps to the future. And really, the good stuff doesn't start till Hal gets introduced.
Yeah.
I could see how you feel that way. But I just think it's the way it was made, like the way it was shot, because it was a Kubrick film.
Yeah.
Helps it out a lot. But then maybe that's why it is so...
Yeah, see, I'm not the biggest Stanley Kubrick fan either. You know,
I feel like you either like him or you don't.
The Shining's fine. And then, what is it, Full Metal Jacket?
Yeah.
Yeah. But most... I don't like Clockwork Orange. Yeah, a lot of his other stuff, I'm just not... So maybe that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's my hot take.
Yeah.
I will not be... Now, you feel free to talk about...
Okay.
About it, because I know you enjoy it. I just... Yeah, that's my hot take.
But I gotta say, you know, I really enjoy mostly because of the ending, because it's just so crazy, and the fact that they did that back in, what, like 1968 or something... I don't know when that movie was made, but it was in the late 60s.
It was a while ago.
And the fact that they were able to pull off the effects that they were able to pull off, and just the ending, I'm like, whoa, what a crazy movie, you know? And it's just like, to think that that's the same movie that started off with the apes, it's like...
Yeah.
It's a little crazy, so...
It is.
It's not my favorite movie by any means, but...
Sure, sure. But you enjoy it more than
I do.
I do,
yeah.
Yes.
It sounds like that's not hard, though.
Correct. And maybe it's just one of those things where I just, my dad, whenever he could have it on, he would have it on, and I just...
That will ruin it for
you. This one again?
That'll do it.
Yeah, so maybe now that I'm older, I need to give it another go, but I just, I can't promise that I won't turn it off in the middle of it. Yeah. I did end up, you know... being okay with the Lord of the Rings movies after rewatching them. So maybe there's hope for...
Lord of the Rings has a lot more action, though.
This is true. The second one, especially.
Yeah, the first one maybe not so much action, but the second and the third one have a lot of action.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely... I should have given the second one a chance when it first came out, but boy, that first one just...
yeah.
I wasn't in for it.
No, could see how 2001 would be off-putting to a lot of people. Especially it's paced very slowly.
Yeah.
Maybe back in the day it wasn't, but you know, the way movies are made now, it's paced very slowly.
Yeah. But yeah. And we probably should mention too, we're really not going to touch on Star Wars.
No.
We've already had a Star Wars episode.
Yeah.
And we're not going to really touch on Star Trek, because there's going to be a Star Trek episode at some point. Because there's just so much material.
Yeah, that's definitely its own episode.
It's and it deserves its own episode because of, you know, the kind of what Gene Roddenberry did and the trail it blazed, if you will, for for going forward. So yeah, so we really won't touch on those.
Yeah.
But we recognize that they exist. Yeah. I've heard of them.
Just a time or two.
Just a time or two. But yeah. So, boy, do we want to... What does sci-fi mean to you? Since we talked about Back to the Future, what does a movie or a book, what does, or game or whatever, yeah, what does it have to have for you to consider it science fiction?
That's a tough but great question. Well, you know, sci-fi is just... It's a speculative form of fiction. So, to me, it's got to have some kind of extrapolation of society, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, so if it's post-apocalyptic, then it's like, this is what could happen if this happened. Or if it's like a science fiction, like space travel, this is what could happen if we got off Earth and colonized this place, or if we went to another galaxy and this. You know, so it's kind of asking, like, what if this were the case of everyday life? Things that don't hurt sci-fi: laser guns, robots, time travel, space. It doesn't have to have those things, all of them. But like, so like, for example, you were talking about Back to the Future. Do you ever watch the show Eureka?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Eureka's a great sci-fi show, mm-hmm, but they don't go to space.
Correct.
That's more of a lighter sci-fi show, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a sci-fi show because it's a speculation of like, technology, future technology, and the situations they get into are very sci-fi based. But then you take a show, and what I like about sci-fi is there's a spectrum too. Mm-hmm. So you have something like Eureka, but then you also have something, and I know we're not going to talk a lot about TV, but I'm just happen to be watching Farscape right now.
Yes.
So you have Farscape, which is almost on the other end of the spectrum, where it's like hardcore sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that those two things can exist in the same genre.
Exactly. Well, you know, and I know we talked about it on previous episodes, but I had watched the series The Expanse,
yeah,
on Prime, and I would, you know, it is obviously on that farther end of the spectrum, because they are literally in space, and Mars is inhabited, and the Outer Rim's inhabited, and you've got the ships, you've got, yeah, so it's, but I want to commend you. While you were talking, I found a definition of science fiction.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's a definition for science fiction?
There's a definition.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Usually futuristic.
Okay.
Science fiction speculates about alternative ways of life made possible by technological change, and hence has sometimes been called speculative fiction.
Wow.
Like fantasy, and often associated with it, science fiction envisions alternative worlds with believably consistent rules and structures. So you kind of hit it.
Wow.
And then what are the five elements of science fiction?
The fifth element.
Yeah, what if? Every great science fiction novel explores a what-if question,
wow,
which is a hypothetical question that ignites your imagination.
Okay, I nailed it.
An unfamiliar setting.
Okay.
Innovative technology, relatable characters, and themes about humanity.
Yeah.
Those are the five elements of science fiction.
I like that.
You, my friend, it's like you're a professional writer or something.
Well, something like that.
you hit on that. So yeah, so I, now obviously you'll have some that play fast and loose with those rules,
yeah,
and obviously these are not, you know, written in stone that this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And I also love the fact that they say usually,
right,
futuristic, because there have been some great science fiction stories set in the past, but they gave it some futuristic elements,
yeah,
to what if, and it's that what if.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that is what we're dealing with. Although I would be interested in hearing all of our listeners, what their interpretations,
yeah,
of science fiction are. Is there something that has to happen,
right,
in the story for you to consider it science fiction?
Yeah, what makes it sci-fi,
yeah,
to you?
To you. So yeah, so Facebook,
yeah,
Instagram, don't do the Twitter. we're not up on that yet again. So, but yeah, so anyway, so that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But boy, You really hit it. You I guess I just have speculation. You even said the speculation part.
I guess I've just consumed so much sci-fi that right? it's become part of me.
Yeah, so it's... Look, so... And I know we've talked about this before. I mean, my childhood was consumed with two genres. Westerns and science fiction. Because that is what my dad loved. He loved Louis L'Amour books, and he loved Isaac Asimov, Robert A. Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke, Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yeah, the big guns.
Oh, gosh. Who's the other one? I can't think of his name right now. If I walked downstairs, I'd see the books. But, so it was... It was either a Western or it was sci-fi.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on the TV, which we've talked about before, it was, you know, if Star Trek was on playing in syndication somewhere, we were watching it.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone has some great sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because almost all of it, even if they're not traveling in time or space, there's that what if element.
Yeah.
You know, so it was almost ingrained in me at a young age.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, and then any of our older listeners, we won't call any of you out, but, you know, my dad grew up in the age where, you know, he was 12 when we landed on the moon.
Mm.
So anyone who's of that generation, you know, they were seeing the sci-fi kind of really start to become a realization, right?
Yeah.
'Cause you had the books, The Time Machine, and... so much of Jules Verne's work and stuff, and that was just fantastical. It's like, but then all of a sudden you start seeing us actually go into the stars and land on the moon, and then you see Star Trek on there, and now look at us, we have these things that we can hold in our hands and talk to people. I mean, it's just so neat to kind of see it just play out. But it started with actually seeing people go out into the stars,
yeah.
and that had to have been wild. And that's something Dad and I talked about a lot. What was it like seeing that on the TV and actually watching that play out? And I mean, your dad's a little bit younger than mine, but I mean, he would be of that generation too. I have to ask him about that sometime.
Yeah,
because that'd be neat. But so there we go. That's what we're gonna be
Those
touching
are the
on.
Parameters.
Yeah.
One thing I was trying to figure out was like when exactly. They coined the term sci-fi.
Ooh,
but
when did it?
Yeah, but I feel like that is like too contested to really worry about right now. So we will just say that it started with what's the first thing that was sci-fi? Some people say Mary Shelley was the first science fiction.
Well. The term science fiction was used first in 1851
Ooh.
In Chapter 10 of William Wilson's A Little Earnest Book Upon a Great Old Subject. So, but then there's one, The Chemical Wedding is considered the first science fiction work, although... I also, you hear a lot of people say that Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Or
H.G. Wells.
Yep. The term science fiction was popularized, if not invented, in the 1920s by one of the genre's principal advocates, the American publisher Hugo Gernsback, for which you have the Hugo Award, which for best science fiction story. So when you click on here, who first created science fiction... They attribute it to Mary Shelley for Frankenstein. And then the Last Man, which was done in 1826. So there's always going to be that debate, right?
Yeah,
what actually started it? You know, we have the ability, because we find things now, to go, well, this actually could have been considered science fiction.
Yeah.
Maybe... Back in the 1800s, no one knew what the chemical wedding was.
Right.
In fact, I didn't know until I just saw
that.
Yeah,
I'd never heard of that.
But yeah, so I'm okay with saying Mary Shelley.
Yeah. I think, well, here's my theory. Science fiction hasn't been invented yet.
Ooh.
Somebody in the future goes back in time.
Oh.
Creates science fiction.
There we go.
That's the basis.
That's the basis. That's how we get all this stuff.
That's how we get it.
Someone from the future came back in time and started creating all this.
Yeah. Maybe H.G. Wells had a time machine.
Maybe he did.
He's like, guys, the time machine is a real story. It's a true story, it's but nobody believes it.
But, oh my gosh. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're getting meta. This has got some layers I wasn't expecting today. So, besides A Space Odyssey 2001, when someone says, well, and maybe that wouldn't even be your suggestion.
Right.
I would never suggest it to someone. Someone says, I don't like science fiction.
Ooh.
I could never get into it. What do you tell them? Watch this.
God, that's such a great question. Watch. You almost want to say something. What's a good, like, comedy sci-fi? Because I feel like if you mix it, maybe not even just a comedy, but something that's like a sci-fi western, a sci-fi comedy, a sci-fi horror. Because if you mix it with something else,
yeah,
you don't get the pure, like...
Correct.
So then, you know, people could... they can say, like, oh, I like comedy, so I'd watch... God, I don't know. I mean...
If you want a straight-up comedy, I would say Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, Galaxy Quest is a good one.
You just mentioned westerns, and I know this movie did not do well at the box office, and it gets panned, and... But I think it's an absolute blast to watch, and that's Cowboys and Aliens.
I never saw that.
I absolutely love it. I thought it was great. There's Spaceballs.
True.
If you want to do the whole comedy thing, of course there's Back to the Future, because we both contend that it is. If you wanted to go the horror route, I mean, you do Alien, right?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend Alien.
I don't think, but that's just me. I also, now, if you want to introduce them to something that's sci-fi, but it's just goofy and it's fun and you don't have to think too hard.
Yeah.
What about Starship Troopers?
Starship Troopers. That's a good one.
I mean, that's another one where people are just, I think it's getting to the point where it's kind of like got the cult status.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it did well in the theaters. Dad and I went and saw that in the theaters. We love it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy is a good foot in the door to sci-fi because it's also a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Terminator is a fun one because it's just totally action, especially if you watch Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Men in Black.
Ooh, I forgot about Men in Black. I didn't have them on my list. Good one.
Yeah.
Men in Black would be a good one because, yeah, you get a little bit of action, you get a lot of comedy.
Yeah. The other one I want to mention just because I just saw it, I think I talked about that on the end of the month, though, but Blade Runner.
Yes.
For the visuals.
Yeah.
Blade Runner is so visually good, and the music is great, too. The story is good. It's a good movie. But, like, I just, when I think of sci-fi aesthetic, I almost think of Blade Runner,
mm-hmm.
you know? So.
Yeah, I think for a certain slice of people, you say sci-fi and that's the movie they think of. Now, I have yet to watch the new one, Blade Runner 2049. Have you seen that?
Yes.
And how was that?
It was good. I mean, it was not... I mean, to me, the original Blade Runner is like a hallmark of sci-fi. But the Blade Runner 2049 was pretty good. And it was Denis Villeneuve, I think, directed it. So he knows what he's doing.
Sure.
And aesthetically, it was also very similar. You know, it was good to look at.
Yeah.
2049 was.
Nice. Yeah, I think we own it digitally. So that's one. Another one that I realize isn't on my list, but it was one I watched a bunch when I was a kid, was Tron.
Yeah, Tron.
So, what was that? The 1980s? 82, I believe?
The glorious 80s.
And I just remember being in awe because it utilized so much CGI.
Yeah.
Right? Which, you know, was always done sparingly, it seemed like, in movies. Would you consider, and I think, you know what, based on our thing, what about Westworld?
Yeah, that's
the
like
TV show, but then the movie.
I honestly haven't seen it either, but I think that's I mean, it's got artificial intelligence, right?
Yeah.
So, And
you've got a robot.
Yeah, so...
That goes haywire.
Yeah, so I think... And it's a Western. It's a sci-fi Western.
And it's a sci-fi Western. Best of both worlds. The TV show is amazing. Now, yeah. Admittedly, I only watched the... let me put it this way. The first season is amazing.
Yeah,
that's what I heard. I own the others. I just haven't watched them yet. They're on my to-do list, which, you know, is ever-growing. But, yeah, the movie, which... It always surprises me when I see that Michael Crichton is the one who directed it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, such... And again, they did some CGI, too, because that's how he sees. But, yeah, Westworld, I got ourselves off track.
That's okay.
I was talking about ones that... to suggest. Boy, I took us down there. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
this is how we do things.
This is how we do it.
We just talk in circles.
It is interesting. What's the most palatable? Because you want to say Star Wars because that's like the most famous sci-fi.
Sure.
But like Star Wars is like really hard sci-fi. You know, Stranger Things would be a good gateway into sci-fi because it's a sci-fi, but it's not super duper. Space lasers, aliens, guns. You know,
yeah.
The reason I even bring Stranger Things up is because I had a coworker once who was like, I don't really like sci-fi. Like, I'll watch Star Wars, but that's about it. And I'm like, they said, I don't like hard sci-fi. I was like, Star Wars is super hard sci-fi. Like, that's not even our galaxy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But they're like, I can't watch Stranger Things. It's too much sci-fi. I was like,
oh, that's interesting.
Bro, that's in Indiana.
Yeah.
That's like the least sci-fi state.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting, though, and it's probably because, you know, Star Wars is just so embedded in our
culture, and
in our culture that it isn't even thought of as being, it's just a space Western. It's just, it's Star Wars. That's interesting. Well, how would you feel, because one of my favorite sci-fi stories is The Matrix. If we're, you know, again, if we're not talking about Star Wars and this and that, I absolutely love The Matrix. But again, I wonder if the concept is too much for some people.
Yeah. Well, I think,
but visually it's just amazing.
Yeah. Visually it's very good. I think The Matrix was kind of ahead of its time in a lot of ways. So I could see how people might not be ready for it at the time, but, just the concept of the living in a simulation is very, very prevalent now. Like, people joke about that all the time. But probably because of The Matrix, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really ahead of its time. But yeah, it's a great... I mean, you know, the second two or whatever, and I never saw the fourth one. But the first one was really, like, groundbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, it still gets copied to this day for some of its visuals, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. I do want to point out... I put two different movies in here that starred the same guy. And that's Mr. Charlton Heston.
Oh, yeah.
You have The Planet of the Apes, if we want to go ahead and talk about that. Because, again, that's the what if, right?
Right.
And
I love Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes is amazing. Now, how many of them have you watched?
Oh, my God. They kind of blend together after
they
a while.
They do.
Now, I've seen all the new ones.
See, I have not. I watched the first one. How many new ones are there?
Three, and the first one is the least good.
Oh, okay.
It's not bad, but it's not as good because the two other ones are more actual Planet of the Apes movies.
But how does it go? Is the first one's Planet of the Apes?
Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Rise of the Planet of the Apes? And then is it...
Oh my God, I always mix this up. I think it's Rise, Battle, and Dawn.
And then what's this last one going to be called?
Planet of the Kingdom of the Apes is the new one that's coming
okay.
out.
Or is it Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
What did I say?
Planet of the Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
So it goes Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
Gosh, there's a lot of stuff here. Oh, no. Yeah, so Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
And War?
War for the Planet of the Apes.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
And then Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming out next month.
Yeah, I haven't watched the other two. Now, which one is Woody Harrelson in?
He is in War for the Planet Apes.
War for the Planet Apes, okay. Because no one that was in the first one's in the second one, right?
Right.
Okay. Besides Caesar? Is that the name of the...
Yeah, Caesar's the only...
He's in all three, right?
Well, I think some of the apes...
Well, sure, sure, same, sure, but the human
the characters... The humans change each movie.
The humans change each movie, but he's the focal character. Yeah. But yeah. He's not in the next one, right?
Right, the next one is like in the future.
Way in the... way off. Okay.
I'm hoping that in this one we see Charlton Heston's character... Because in the one of them, there's a little, I want to say it's the first one, there's a little Easter egg about the Icarus going missing.
Okay.
Which is the ship that Charlton Heston is on. So I'm hoping that in this one we get some time travel.
Get some time. Oh, that'd be cool. I need to watch the other two. I think Sharon said she's either watch both of them or one of them and said it was good. So I need to get back on there and give them a go. But yeah, the originals, I love the originals.
Yeah, I'm looking up the... I've actually read the book too.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because you know the 2001 flop?
Yeah.
The end of the book is very similar to that one.
Really?
Yeah.
God, yeah, that was a terrible movie.
Yeah. So I have
Marky
seen...
Marky Mark couldn't save it.
Well, let's see. Gallery. Which ones have I seen of Planet of the Apes?
Because with there's Planet of the Apes. Oh my gosh. And what's cool is now you've got all these comics coming out that have tie-ins for the Planet of the Apes, right? There's, and I don't know if I gave it to you to read or if maybe I gave it to Weldy, but it's... King Kong versus Planet of the Apes.
Oh, really?
That one was really good. There's Green Lantern
and
Planet of the Apes.
So it goes Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, which is the one that I don't think I've seen all the way through.
Yeah.
Then Escape from the Planet of the Apes, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which I think I've seen those three.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've seen all of Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. It's kind of takes everything that's kind of cool about science fiction, right?
Yeah.
You've got the time travel, you've got the spaceship, but then you've got the whole, oh my gosh, what happened here?
Yeah.
And it just turns everything on its head. And of course got some great lines in it that still get quoted.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Although it just dawned on me, you're Blade Runner based on a Philip K. Dick story,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Would you consider the story Man from the High Castle a sci-fi because it's...
Ooh.
Or is it just an alternate history?
To me, that's more of an alternate history. Okay. The problem is Philip K. Dick is such a prolific sci-fi writer that his work tends to be labeled as all as sci-fi.
Yeah.
But to me, alternate history isn't quite sci-fi.
Yeah.
It is a what if, but there's no time travel involved. It's just like
Exactly. I would agree with you. But, What was the other one? Oh, a movie that Sharon mentioned. Oh, you know what? Wait. I got to get back to Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Soylent Green.
I didn't know he was in that. I've never seen Soylent Green.
He's the main character in it.
Wow.
He's the investigator in it.
Wow.
The people.
Yeah.
It's the people.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Anyone who's not watched Soylent Green, you got to watch it
at least. I need to watch it.
It is just such a... Man, it's a 70s movie. And I think it's made kind of resurgence because I see people talking about it more again.
Oh, really?
And I think it's the whole... It kind of has gone full circle where it's just like... And maybe it's because of The Matrix because it's kind of the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, oh, this is how we're surviving is you got this. But, you know, and the world is running on the amniotic feud... of the fluid of these people.
Yeah.
But in The Matrix, you know, we're just raising them to be batteries. But yeah, Soylent Green is that was one when I used to have cable, it would pop up on TCM every now and again and I would just watch it. I enjoy it. I think it's a fun watch. Might be a little slow on spots and you know, it is a product of its time, but it's, I don't know. I enjoy it. You'll have to give that a watch.
Yeah, I need to. That's one that I've overlooked for many years.
Yeah. Now, one that deals with time travel that I had to watch twice in the theater just to understand is 12 Monkeys.
I've never seen 12 Monkeys. That's the one with Bruce Willis?
Bruce Willis, yeah, and Brad Pitt. It. Yeah.
Never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I draw the limit at 11.
At 11. Can't have more than 11 monkeys.
Because that's how Planet of the Apes starts.
That's true.
12 Angry Apes.
12 Angry Apes all jumping on the bed.
Yeah, and they're
sent. One hopped off and hit a tent. Yep. Oh, my gosh. No, 12 Monkeys. I remember just walking out of the theater going, I really liked it, but I don't know that I understood it. So, and my dad wanted to see it, so I went back and watched it with him again. And it's just like, yeah, I still don't know that I picked up on everything, but I enjoyed it. But I'm still not sure that I got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's been a while since I've watched it.
I've heard it's cerebral.
It's confusing. You can really get kind of lost trying to figure everything out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what else you got?
I don't think you have this one written down. RoboCop?
I do not have RoboCop written down. Shame on me.
You know, RoboCop is a quintessential 80s sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
It's got one robot, but he's the main cop. He's the main robot, so he's the main guy. Well,
he fights that one other robot. Oh,
that's true. There's Ed 9-2000 or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is.
99 or whatever.
Yeah.
So he fights that guy. But, yeah, so RoboCop is interesting because it's also sort of it's almost a parody of, like, it kind of reminds me of Judge Dredd a little bit, which is something I should talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
But Judge Dredd is like a hyper fascist, basically.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what RoboCop was.
Yeah.
Because he's just going around like
dealing out his own brand of justice. Yeah,
really. So it's interesting because it's sort of like in the 80s there was just this sort of like, I don't know what it was. It was just like this look at authority that people would have. Like these hyper vigilant authority figures like Judge Dredd or RoboCop, and they would just make these like satirical movies about them, but they would use the sci-fi as like a layer to separate it from reality, which is one thing I like about sci-fi.
Yeah.
But because, like, for example, in Judge Dredd, there's a, I think they just released this recently, like within the last couple of years, there was a series of Adventures of Judge Dredd that couldn't be republished because they had trademark copyright, because there was like a war between, so Judge Dredd is set in the far future, right?
Yeah.
After the apocalypse, and there was like a war between fast food chains, but they were like gangs, so picture like the Warriors but like McDonald's and so they couldn't publish it because it was like copyright, and they finally got the ability to so they're like making fun of like the way that these people shape society with this absurd sort of look at, you know, their gangs, kind of. And so, you know, RoboCop kind of did the same thing, where it was like, because like with Judge Dredd, I think they wanted to make you root for the fascist.
Yeah.
Was basically their plan. Like, how can we make you root for the fascist? And Judge Dredd, and RoboCop was kind of the same way. Not that RoboCop is, he's not as bad as Judge Dredd, I don't think.
No.
Judge Dredd is very serious about the law. But yes. RoboCop can't help it. He's programmed.
Yeah, he's programmed.
He's programmed.
But he tries to find a little humanity at the end.
Yeah.
It's funny you bring both of those up. I'm looking at my Sega games, and I have a Judge Dredd Sega game.
Really? I didn't know they made a Judge Dredd game.
Yeah, and it's quite fun. And then I'm pretty sure I've got RoboCop versus Terminator.
Oh, nice.
Which is a fun one, too. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have RoboCop. Shame on me. I tell you, when I started making my list, there are just so many that I almost was frozen trying to decide what to put. Because I had Alien written down.
Yeah.
Well, not at first. Matrix was the very first one I wrote. And then I did the Galaxy Quest just for, you know, grins and giggles. But yeah, it's like all of a sudden I just went blank. And Sharon had to start helping me. One that she suggested, because it's one of her personal favorites, is Frequency. Have you ever seen that? It's got Jim Caviezel and Dennis Quaid.
No, I don't know.
And
that one.
They're a father and a son.
Oh, is this the one where they talk through the radio?
Through the ham radio. Yeah. And Jim's trying to help Dennis catch this killer so that, you know, he doesn't kill his mom, I think is what it was. And so, yeah. And again, it's one of those things where at first glance, you're like, well, that's not science fiction. They're not in space. They're not doing this. But they're literally talking through a ham radio,
yeah,
40 years apart or 30 years apart or whatever. And then it creates this what if,
yeah,
scenario at the end where it completely changes his future. So, yeah, it's pretty wild. I just realized, where's my thing?
Your thing?
For the PlayStation 2.
Oh, like the thing?
The game. Oh, it must still be downstairs. Huh.
Any one of those could be the thing.
They could be the thing. Boy, the ADD just took over on that one. I'm sorry. Wow.
It's okay.
So speaking of which, do you consider The Thing science fiction?
Oh, definitely. Science fiction horror.
Yeah,
because absolutely. It deals with an alien.
Yeah.
Is the big thing. But, I mean, I would say it's more of a horror movie, but, like, I would say, like, 60-40.
Yeah.
If I had to number.
I'd go with you on that. That and They Live,
They Live is more of a sci-fi movie, I think,
yeah,
because that also deals with aliens. But, see, and that's another thing with sci-fi. You can parody the way society looks, and They Live is a perfect example of that, because they're talking about, you know, how we're asleep, and the ruling class is the one that's awake. And I just think, like, to do that with aliens is such a great,
absolutely
great move.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think everybody appreciated it back then. That's why it's a cult movie now.
Yeah.
People weren't ready for it, you know.
Oh no! But I remember the first time Maddie watched it with me.
Yeah.
And she would have been, I don't know, 12. Maybe I should have been letting her watch it at that point. But I mean, she literally was just, when it was over, or when he finally started wearing the glasses, and she's just like, well, that's going on now. I'm like, yeah.
I think They Live's message has gotten even more powerful as time goes on.
Absolutely. Because
we have social media and everything now.
Yeah.
I wish that he had that back then, because he could have made...
Oh, could you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
No, yeah, so...
But yeah. Oh, fun. Oh, gosh. What else do we have on here that I can mention? Fifth Element.
Fifth Element is a great one.
Fifth Element is a great one. If anyone who doesn't know it, it stars Bruce Willis, Gary Oldman, what's her name? Mila Jovovich.
Mila Jovovich.
He's just a cab driver. They're literally in space flying cabs, all that fun stuff. But it's kind of neat because they tie her back to, like, this ancient ceremony, right?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, they had to meld the future with this past. And it was kind of neat how I always enjoyed it. Gary Oldman's villain in that is just fantastic. Chris Tucker's character is hilarious. What was his name?
Ruby Ra.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. One of, I think, better sci-fi movies to be put out in the recent times is Arrival. Not the Charlie Sheen, The Arrival, which I think was from the 90s, but Arrival with Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner.
I've been meaning to watch that forever.
Oh, my gosh. I think I have a copy of it on Vudu. I think we own it physically,
too. That's
the
one where they're, like, trying to make contact with language and everything.
Correct.
Yeah, I've heard that's a great one.
It is such a great movie. It was one where I think I appreciated more watching it the second time.
Because
the first time, it's just like, what?
You're trying to figure it out.
Trying to figure it out. But yeah, oh my gosh. That is so worth a watch. I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, I think that's based on a short story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to figure it out. I know I knew it at one point. But
now, another one that you recently watched that falls in this category is Dune.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Dune. Because I was going to talk about the book and the movie. And the first movie. Well, maybe we shouldn't talk about the first movie.
You can skip the first movie.
The first movie, because it's two movies now.
Yeah.
I mean the David Lynch
one. The original David Lynch. Yes.
Yeah, so Dune, very interesting book and movie. it is widely regarded as one of the most important sci-fi books of all time. And it's very researched, and the way he builds the world is just crazy. And the movies are a pretty good adaptation. One thing I like about the book and the movie is that the message, one of the big messages is you have to be weary of charismatic leaders, which is something that I think a lot of people who read Dune miss or watch it. But I got to be honest, when I watched part two, they kind of hit you over the head with that a little bit. But I think that's because the director was like, I don't think people get this.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of be a little more. Because you're watching it and you're like, oh, he's just going a little bit more and more and more. But, yeah, it's really interesting. He's made up, like, this whole world, this whole galaxy. Dune is one of the worlds, but he's made up, like, a whole system of government and everything. And what's really interesting about Dune the book was it wouldn't get, like, nobody would publish it. And then there was a guy who used to publish car manuals, and he was like, yeah, we're going to publish this in a couple volumes. And then, boom, Dune was born. So, yeah, pretty interesting stuff. I've read the book twice.
Oh.
I own it. I own two copies of it. One is a pretty version. So.
How is it as a read?
It's a little bit of a slog because it was written in the 60s. But I think you have to read it more than once to really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time I read it, I was like, eh, whatever. But then the second time I read it, I was like, oh, I think I'm picking up more on the context of this story. Now, the problem with Dune, well, I shouldn't say the problem, but the complications with Dune is that they're still making Dune books.
Mm-hmm.
The son of Frank Herbert, who's, I think his name is Brian Herbert, is still putting stuff out with other authors. So there's like a billion Dune books out now. But I hear that like the three or four that Frank Herbert wrote are actually worth reading. Like all of them are worth reading. I haven't read any of the second, I haven't read any but the first one, so maybe one day I will. But yeah, so Dune, pretty interesting stuff. I can see how it influenced a lot of sci-fi coming off of that, in the way that it was created and the way that he created the galaxy and everything. So
yeah, I know my dad read the Dune book several times, and the first movie, for what it is, even though he said that, you know, it didn't really match up with the book. Yeah. Whenever it was on, he'd leave it on. But as I've stated before, he also would read while movies were on, so he wasn't always paying attention. Right. But the new movies, big thumbs up.
Yeah, they're good. Watches. You know, as I said when we did the review for last month, we've definitely made such strides in technology that it's just possible to make these things, you know, now, like spaceships and giant worms and, you know, even something as small as having blue eyes is, you know, or the personal shields. Because in the first one, you remember the shields in the David Lynch movie?
Yes.
They're very, like, I love that aesthetic, but I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
So.
Now, and maybe you don't have a take on this, but because I never really put two and two together. But I recently watched a video where someone was drawing the similarities between Dune and Star Wars, and their implication was that George Lucas pretty much ripped off the movie Dune,
I have,
then since he made the movies first before the Dune movie, then everyone's kind of like, ooh, Dune's kind of ripping off Star Wars, and they're like, no, the book was written in the 60s.
I have heard stuff like that before. I'd have to listen to more of what people are saying about that, but yeah, I could see, because Dune is such a big defining work of sci-fi, I can see how lots of stuff afterwards, because I don't know that anything before Dune was like quite as galactic.
Yeah,
I don't know though, but
yeah, I think, and maybe this is me just defending Star Wars because I love it so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think you were starting to allude to the fact that when you have something like that that's so different, it's easy to start kind of being the catalyst for other ideas. And, ooh, I want to try that. And can I make that visually? And
yes.
And so it's...
That's something I definitely understand.
is it a ripoff, or is it more just a, ooh, that really sparked something, yeah, and now I want to do that. And of course, they look similar, you know? Right. So, I don't know. That could be something else someone... I've never read Dune, so I believe I have a copy downstairs because it's Dad's. But, yeah, I never read it, so I don't know. I can't make a comment on it one way or the other. But there are some similarities when you start kind of looking at it. But, yeah. Oh, let's see. What else? Probably one of the most sci-fi would be Contact, right? The search for...
You know, this is an interesting thing about Contact. That's the Jodie Foster one, right?
Yeah.
I have seen Contact like 8 times up to a certain point,
mm-hmm,
because we watched it in French class.
Real? Okay.
I don't know why.
In French class?
Yeah. So it's like every now and then she would just be like, we're going to put on Contact. And I was like, we never finished it.
Huh.
And I know there's something crazy at the end, and I just never finished it.
There is something crazy. Well, crazy, yeah. But yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so we watched
French class.
Yeah.
Okay. That's odd. But yeah.
I guess the French love sci-fi? I don't know.
I don't know. Or your French teacher just did. And
Or that was the only movie that she owned. She was like, we have to.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that was the only one approved for the class.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
It is weird,
that
isn't it?
That I don't even know what to say. Was
Trey Bizarre.
The dreams. Look at you. I mean, we got to talk about iRobot, right? Because that ties in with Asimov.
With Asimov, yeah. I've read iRobot. Actually, no. iRobot is like a selection of short stories. Have I read it or have I read part of it? I can't. Sometimes my reading blurs together.
Sure. Oh, I get that. Because I have the same memory. It's like... It's just, it's a short story in the collection, if I remember correctly.
Well, I think iRobot is the name of the book, and then there's like, it's like it starts with like a very simplistic robot and then goes on.
Yeah.
And like each story is a different year, I think.
Oh, I think you're right. Oh, it's been a while since I've read that. That was something I was talking to a friend last night when you and I had decided we were going to do science fiction is... I would be fine with movies and comics and everything else, but it has been so long since I've read a science fiction novel that I would struggle. I could literally say, oh, well, Asimov, Robert E. Heinlein, Bradbury, Arthur C. Clarke, and that's about all I could do. I know The Expanse is based on a book.
Right.
So,
well, those guys you mentioned, well... Heinlein and Clark and Asimov were like considered like the big three of sci-fi back in their day. So, but Bradbury is obviously a personal favorite of mine.
Yeah.
So.
Which I recently got a copy of the Martian Chronicles. I can't wait to read that. H.G. Wells obviously predates all of them. And I recently, I don't know if I showed you, I got a book that collects like 3 of his stories.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like one of them's The First Men in the Moon. Oh, God, what's the other? There's 2 others, but they're all space sci-fi related. And I've never seen a collection like that before, so that's why I grabbed it. I think I got it at a half-price bookstore. But I've never watched this movie, so I wrote it down because I know that Sharon and Maddie watched it and they loved it, and that's Interstellar.
I never saw that either. It got spoiled for me a little bit, though, because the person at the library was like, do you have that movie where this thing happens? And I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, that's great.
So, yeah. You know what we haven't talked about at all?
What's that?
The sci-fi is basically a key element for the birth of superheroes.
Oh, you're correct.
Because if you think about Superman, who's more sci-fi than Superman? What superhero is more sci-fi than Superman? Well, I'm sure there are now more sci-fi superheroes than Superman. But think Alien. About in the 1930s, two guys from Cleveland are just like, there's this guy, and he's indestructible, and he comes from the planet Krypton, and people are just like,
yeah.
So, because I always try to define, because that's why superheroes are their own genre, because it is a mix of fantasy and science fiction. It's neither, really. But without science fiction and fantasy, there would be no superhero genre.
Correct. Well, Sharon, so before you showed up, Sharon and I were talking about that, because when we were looking through movies, she goes, basically, any Marvel movie,
yeah,
you could argue.
Yes.
There's a few that maybe, but just the fact that they have a superhero in it. Yeah. You know, Captain America.
Yep.
You know, you've got this super secret serum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're fighting these aliens and, yeah, I mean, Avengers.
Yep.
And it's all sci-fi.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, Guardians of the Galaxy. But you're correct. The Superman idea, think about how interesting that must have been back then.
Yeah.
To come up with. But it makes him work, right? He never would have worked as well if he was just a dude from America.
Right.
Right? Well, how did he get like this?
Right.
I mean, you would have made it, and it would have been as believable that, of course, eventually down the road, everyone gets radiation poisoning or this or that, and that's what, or they sit in toxic waste, and that's how they became a superhero, right? That old trope. But, I mean, literally, oh, no, let's make him from another planet, and because of our yellow sun, you know, boom, 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 he's so much stronger and faster and does all these things. I mean, it works so well. But then over the years, they've just made him so godlike that it's hard to write for him, right? Yeah. Well, how do you make it interesting?
Plus, you know, the problem is he's had so many years of stories constantly. Yeah. He's been published constantly since his debut.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Now, let me throw out an oddball for sci-fi. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Jonah Hex. Because they did the Hex line, which was a very short 18-issue series. So after they canceled the Jonah Hex run, Michael Fleischer, somehow Jonah Hex is transported. So I guess I should back up. People who don't know, Jonah Hex is a bounty hunter from the 1800s. he fought in the Civil War on the losing side, and he becomes a bounty hunter. And through the years, he's been treated kind of differently. Who was it? Joe Lansdale kind of gave him almost this supernatural type feel, right? But at one point, they somehow transported him to the 21st century.
Yeah.
And he became almost like a Mad Max type character, where he's battling these oddball factions. But it's, I can remember, Dad had some copies of Hex, and I knew that the character was the same, but he was different, right? He's not wearing his normal Confederate grays. He's not wearing a cowboy hat. And yeah, he's got these space weapons now. It was just such a wild ride, but it was so fun. Again, there you go. You're merging the Western and and sci-fi or space. And it was wild when I was looking it up, because I wanted to see, because, you know, it was only the 18 issues. It only did mildly well in the U.S., but like over in Europe, it was a hit. Like I want to say, it did really well, I think, in Italy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was critically acclaimed in and well-received in Great Britain, Italy, Spain, and Japan. They absolutely loved
That's
it.
That's so funny.
But yeah, so it that was one of those things where it just kind of was odd. Obviously, the Green Lantern Corps for comics, great sci-fi. Although the original Green Lantern, obviously, would you even consider, because that was more magic.
Yeah, that was more. Yeah,
it wasn't. They weren't space cops. They were
not space cops by any means.
Yeah. I had some other comics written down that I'll go through really quick. We've talked about Saga before.
Yeah,
that's great sci-fi. We Only Find You When You're Dead. By Al Ewing, great sci-fi. one of my favorites that I need to finish reading. I got to find the rest of the volumes. Was Copperhead?
Yeah.
Which again, it's a space western, but it's from Image Comics, and it's about a single mom who becomes sheriff of this mining town on this desolate planet, and the person who's her deputy, they don't exactly get along at first, if I remember correctly. It's been a few years since I read the first couple volumes. But yeah, things kind of go awry right at the beginning. But it was a great read. Jeff Lemire, who we've talked about at length on this podcast several times, he did one called Sentient. That was, I think, an exclusive for Comixology.
Oh.
But he also did the Ascender and Descender runs, which was about a... would you call him a... Was he a robot, a cyborg?
I never read those.
Oh, they were very good. Oh, my gosh. Of course, you have Resident Alien, which was turned into
a
TV show. But did you know... they're bringing back Space Ghost.
I think I did hear that.
Dynamite is going to publish a new Space Ghost series. And I was reading the write-up for it, and it sounds very interesting. It's going to start out with the planet where the twins with the... What was the monkey's name?
I don't remember.
Blip.
Yeah, Blip, I
think. Blip. They get attacked. And then this almost, well, ghost, you know, there's the rumors of this vigilante, you know, and was he an old cop that's turned, you know, vigilant, or was he this or that? It seems like now it's only rated teen, so it's not like they're going to go hardcore over the top with it, but it sounds like it's going to be a little bit more than what we're used to from the old cartoons.
Yeah.
So it looks like it could be pretty good. I think that comes out in what month are we in? April. I think it comes out in May or June is when it's going to get released. But yeah, so it's, I mean, in the comics, there's so many that, you know, we could touch on.
Probably have to have a separate episode.
Just have an episode for sci-fi comics. And look, we could do another episode just for sci-fi movies and TVs too, because we didn't come anywhere close to it, to touching anything. But it's just so expansive.
Yeah. Oh, it's The Expanse.
It is The Expanse.
Wow.
But I would love to hear one. What does it have to have for you to consider it a sci-fi?
Yeah.
But more importantly, what's your favorite sci-fi iteration? You know, is it, you know, did you grow up watching Star Trek, or do you love, you know, the Alien series? What's some of your favorite sci-fi stuff? Drop us a note on Instagram or Facebook.
A real note. A physical note.
Type us up a note. Mail it to us. Yeah. And if we know that you really care, if you're able to do that, but we're not giving you our address.
We can get a P.O. box.
You're going to have to. There we go. Send fan mail to this. But yeah, so gosh, yeah, I could keep on talking forever about this. There's just so much to go on about.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you have anything to... tie it all up together.
Just live long and prosper.
There we go. Live long and prosper. And stay nerdy.